This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Shoot the Defense on Radio Football, FNX and StadiumScene.tv. The reason why this show is ever so special tonight is because I've got 5 co-hosts. So this is going to be fun. Well, not for Dan, anyway. Speaking of Dan, the Liverpool fan, Mr. Double D, welcome to the show. How are you doing, mate?
I'm just keeping it together still. I'm on the top of the roof with a Molotov cocktail right now, but... I won't jump into the podcast with this.
There you go. I was about to say that. Thank you very much. You saved me a few sentences. Excellent. Great to have you on, mate. Kojo, how you doing, mate? Long time no speak.
Yeah, I'm good, man. It's been good to come back on the show. 24 hours mixed emotions. Last night was crap. Tonight is wonderful. So, all good, man. How you doing?
Yeah, all good. Can't complain. I think I've lost a few years off my life, but it doesn't matter. It'll be worth it at the end of the season if City pull it off. But anyway, Ranzi, welcome back, mate.
Thank you for having me back. Pleasure to be back on the show. Just want to shout out Duffy, I want to shout out Dunk, I want to shout out the whole Brighton massive for getting the result against our rivals Arsenal on Sunday. Hopefully we're going to be talking about that as well.
We shall be.
Come on, you Spurs.
Hey, Matthew, this isn't a music video, mate, yeah? Shout out my mums. No, I'm playing.
It's like the beginning of a DJ Clue mixtape. Rodri, how you doing, my friend? He's there somewhere. I promise you, listeners, he's there. Maybe he's busy. I don't know. Rodri's there. He'll say hello in a minute. Yeah, I'm all right. I'll tell you what I'll put you on mute, if anything. Don't worry.
Yeah, no worries.
Great to have you back. And Jan, how are you, gentlemen?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. Everyone all right?
Yes, we've done everyone. We've done everyone.
Good.
For crying out loud, this guy, Jesus. Anyway, right. You know what? There's only one place to begin. Sorry, Dan. And we're going to begin with the title race. And Man City have one hand on the trophy going into the final game following their 1-0 win over Leicester tonight. Vincent Kompany's goal, which can only really be described as a thunder bastard, was a difference in a game where nothing but a win was needed for City. Liverpool cranked up the pressure on Saturday with a 3-2 win at St James's Park, but the title will be decided on the final day. And as a United fan, we know what that's all about, winning and losing the title. Rantley, I don't know about you, mate, but my heart was in my mouth for 94 minutes. But what a way to win a game. I mean, this Vincent Kompany, he's made a career out of scoring key goals for City, hasn't he?
100%, man. I was just telling my friends after the game that he truly is a clutch player for them. He shows up at key moments, and tonight was no different. Manchester City piled the pressure on. They were frustrated. Leicester City, they sat well for a majority of the game, and it was going to take something special. And, you know, for Kompany to do what he did at this particular time of the season is incredible, and it looks like they've all but done enough to retain the title.
No, absolutely, mate, absolutely. And Kojo, Fernandinho has been a massive player for Man City for the past few seasons, and we thought that him being out injured would really cost them. But Gundogan has really, really, really stepped up, hasn't he? I think he's been their most key player in the past few weeks.
Yeah, he's a very, very underrated midfielder. Now, the things he can do on the ball is fantastic, but his off the ball reading of the game is also top notch. And because he's not the conventional, he's not the defensive midfielder that Fernandinho is. Fernandinho is a disruptor. He likes to tackle hard and all that kind of stuff. But Gundogan is a lot more laid back. But he does his job so effective. So the few times that Leicester able to get forward, that to get past him first, and that was very, very few occasions. Yeah, so he's fantastic. He's a fantastic player.
Absolutely. And Jan, what's really impressed me tonight about Man City is the fact that a lot of people were saying, you know, Jamie Vardy's got so much pace, and you're getting behind them when they put the ball over the top. But you know, Guardiola did what he's done a lot of times this season, and put Kyle Walker's like a third central defender just to combat that. And Walker, I know going forward he was a little bit sloppy and he played a few stray balls, which frustrated me and obviously you and a lot of United fans and obviously City fans. But he did a job on Vardy tonight, didn't he?
I think City overall in the last two games have done a job. If you look at, you know, Burnley away, which was a banana skin, and tonight where Leicester, I think they're the third best team form-wise in the Premiership. Apart from probably Iheanacho's chance right at the end, they hardly conceded a chance tonight, and neither did they, and neither at Burnley as well. So you've got to give City, you know, massive credit defensively. I mean, everyone talks about, you know, they've scored 100 goals this season and they're attacking kind of leisure that they have. But, you know, Edison has kept his 20th Premier League clean sheet tonight. So as much as, you know, we all talk about City going forward, City defensively are just as good.
No, I agree, mate. I agree. And Rod, to think in January we thought City's loss against Newcastle spelt the end of their title hopes, but they've clawed the 7-point deficit back and they're only one win away from back-to-back titles. Now, I know people are going to be saying that this is the best Premier League team ever because of the fact that the way that they've been playing football and the way that they've absolutely obliterated teams. But let's be 100% honest, they do have some weaknesses.
Who, City?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think where are the weaknesses. Yeah, obviously, defensively, they are a little bit weak, but not massively. You know, they've got players for literally every position. That's why you've got to really take your off for Liverpool, because the squad that they've got, to be even in touching space and even to compete with Manchester City is just unbelievable, because, you know, Manchester City have literally got a player for every position. And then that breeds competition in the day-to-day basis training, and that just makes you a better player. So Liverpool have not got that squad in numbers, but, you know, for where they are, it's just fantastic. But going back to your question, yeah, there's not many weaknesses. Obviously, you'd say they probably need another strong centre-half, but you can see the players you kind of trust now at, like, championship rounds, the last games of the season. You know, Vincent Kompany, you can hang your hat on him. He's in Manchester City through and through, and you can trust him at the back. And then obviously he's popped up with an unbelievable goal that will just live long in the memory for everyone at the ground and everyone watching, probably.
Where do you rate Kompany in the list of best Premier League central defenders then, Rod?
Oh, he's definitely up there. He's definitely up there. You'd obviously, with the usual suspects and the Rio Ferdinand, the John Terry, the Tony Adams. Yeah, he's definitely up there. They're obviously the Vincent Kompany, and then obviously now the Virgil van Dijk. They're definitely up there. Then elite centre halves, and he's definitely one of them, because, you know, he's sometimes carried Manchester City and been a rock for him, and you definitely need that in a championship side, and he's definitely been that for Manchester City.
Mm. Well, Randy, as a Spurs fan, you know, you've got a history of having decent central defence. I know Ledley King is there. I get the feeling that Footy Says is going to tweet out something very similar to the question I just asked Rod.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I think we have gone along those lines before. But yeah, I mean, Kompany, he's been superb for Manchester City. He's not just been, you know, he doesn't just get goals at key moments for his team, but he's been a rock at the back for them. And I think he epitomises everything good that's about the club. Ledley King, he was someone special at the back for us. I mean, for him to do what he did with four Spurs with only one knee, I still get the impression that if he stayed injury free, he wouldn't have been at Spurs for as long as he was. But he's definitely again one of the best defenders that the Premier League has seen, in my eyes, for sure.
Mm. And Dan, you know, again, another guy, Liverpool. You had some great central defenders over the years. You know, your Sammy Hoopiers, your Alan Hansons, and whatnot. I remember when United signed Laurent Blanc, and people were saying, "Oh, it's a panic move from Ferguson, bringing him in for Yapstam, and he's old. He's 36 years old. Yada yada yada." But the things that the younger players learnt from him, this is something that City can use with Vincent Kompany. He's not obviously 36, but he's got that experience there. Plus, he knows City inside out. So even if this is his last full season at Man City, they should really keep him in and around the squad, even if it is for a couple more seasons. No.
Yeah, definitely. He loves the city. he found his missus, obviously, the model, when obviously he came over from Hamburg. So, yeah, definitely. And I just think it's been a, everyone, this is my problem. And I like, obviously, and I agree with what Rod was saying. Anytime I talk to people, they're always like, oh, City's defensive suspect, City's defensive suspect. But City don't let you have the ball. They press from the front. So, therefore, if you can't get the ball off them, then you can't score. So, I just think, in regards to at the back, Laporte has been brilliant this season. But Pep, knowing the experience, the big game experience that company has, he's been playing a lot more towards the back end of the season, where he was on the bench when he was fit earlier in the season. And his experience, so look at the goal today, has dragged him through. And as you said, I'll be pretty sure that he'll probably go on to be in a coach or something like that and stay around the club, because I can't see him leaving the country anytime soon. But as you said, he's only, what, 32? It's just the injuries. It makes it seem like he's older. So he's still going to be playing. He'll still be doing his bit, starting about, depending on injury, 12 to 15 games a season for him. But yeah, he'll stay around, and I'm sure the other defenders are learning from him in terms of carrying the ball out from defence, composure, not being rash when diving in. Because even you see it now, though he can lead and command, his legs are going bit by bit. And today, he got booked for his challenge. We saw the challenge he made on Salah when Liverpool went there earlier on in the year. So he's slowing up, so he might be a liability for them if he was to start week in, week out. But his experience has carried them over the line here, and the other defenders in the team will benefit from it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And let's talk about the Liverpool game, and Kojo, without sounding salty, Liverpool have had more than a bit of luck this season, and Saturday was no different. I mean, first there was Alexander-Arnold's handball on the line before Newcastle's equaliser that went unpunished, and then the so-called foul on Fabinho, which led to the winner. Now, first of all, what did you make of the handball? Should a penalty have been given and the defender sent off, or was it the right decision in your opinion?
I think it's because they scored immediately after that handball was the reason why the referee didn't deal with it. But, I mean, the law would state that because he's handballed off the line, he has to get sent off. It's a weird one for me. I actually don't know. I mean, considering he scored straight away, I don't know if... Do we go back to the incident? I don't know. I actually don't know. I don't know what how the rule applies in that moment, because he scored straight away. It went off his arm straight to Atsu. Atsu finished it. So I don't know if the rule still applies. I mean, technically, I thought he should miss it off, but...
It becomes a yellow card.
Oh, it becomes a yellow card. Yeah. But he didn't get anything, did he?
No, he didn't get nothing at all.
Okay,
no.
See, there you go. See, that's where the problem is. So it's not sending off, but if you're supposed to book him, you have to do your job and book him.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I want to ask this question to everyone, because this is an interesting one. I want to know all your opinion on the free kick, because... the linesman was right in front of it, and when you look at the incident in real time, I can kind of understand why it was given, because there's a little quick tug of the shirt, and let's be honest, we've seen them given everywhere on the pitch. Rod, what did you make of the foul? Okay. I don't know where Rod is. Dan, come on, you Liverpool fan, talk to me.
And obviously I saw a tweet that you did, still. In normal time, it's a mad one, because, as you said, slowed down, you can see blatantly it's not a foul. But in normal time, Richie kind of grabs at Fabinho, but he doesn't touch him. But the way the lads was looking at it, because of the way Fabinho goes down, it looks like he's been pulled down. So what you said was correct. In normal time, it actually looks like a little foul was committed, and he's probably thinking, oh, the clock's running down. They just gave it. If it was earlier on in the game, it might not have been given. But there's still a lot of play that comes after the free kick comes in. And thank God Van Dijk told Shaqiri to take it, because I was sitting there thinking, Shaqiri has to take it. It has to be an in-swinger. But if Newcastle head it away at the end of the day, nobody's talking about it. But Origi's got his head on it. It's guarding off Lascelles, and we've got 3 points at the end of the day. So, yeah, I saw why it was given. Obviously, when you slow it down, as with a lot of things, it doesn't look like it's not a foul. But Richie kind of grabs in, he kind of drops in, and you see his arm, but he doesn't actually touch Fabinho. But when the lads were looking at it, it's going to look like, okay, he's gone down. He must have pulled him. So, yeah, he's conned the referee, but how many players can the referee week in, week out? Obviously, because we're going for the championship, so everything, every little small detail is going to be highlighted. I see cheating in basically every football game I watch, but, you know.
I think you're being kind to the linesman, man. As an official, I mean, he's right in front of you. I would forgive it if he was maybe 6-7 steps behind or... Also, but he's right next to the incident, like he's right there. And for me, that's what frustrates me. Like, I don't blame. I'll get angry at a player for diving and trying to con ref because that's obviously cheating. But a lot of players trying to gain their advantage, as you said, is the right thing. I've seen actually young dive plenty of times. So you know, I'm not gonna be a hypocrite and say, oh, you know, it's just Liverpool. But in terms of the officials, this is why they get criticised, because you're right next to it. It's the same thing. People are going to highlight Liverpool this season because the same thing with the offside against West Ham. You know, you're right there.
I'll be honest with you. I saw it on the timeline, and the angle from behind both Richie and Fabinho, it looks like Fabinho's made the most of it. However, the angle in front of them, you can see why the linesman has given it. And I can see why it was probably given in real time. So I wouldn't be too critical of the linesman because it happened so fast as well.
Exactly.
And obviously, he's thrown himself to the ground, but there has been, even though it was slight contact from Richie, there was contact there. So from that particular angle in front, I can see why the linesman has given it. But from behind, it just looked like Fabinho threw himself to the ground.
It's an absolute con the linesman. Like the linesman's 5 yards away. He's con the referee. The way he's gone down, it's unnatural. It's just he's con the referee, and they've got to defend it better. And Liverpool have got that little bit of luck, and that's what you need. That's why people still think that Liverpool might have that chance. There's still a twist in the tail because, you know, a lot of things are still falling for Liverpool. All right, you know, Vincent Kompany's come on and shank one from 25 yards, it's going to top corner. You'd say that was a bit of luck, because when has he ever done that? But, yeah, going back to the original, the way he's gone down, it was embarrassing. The linesman's 5 yards away. It was never a foul. But like I say, Newcastle have got to defend it better.
Well, Jan, was Richie a bit naive then? Because, you know, he's obviously put his arm across to prevent Fabinho from getting the ball in the box or something. Should he have just kept his distance?
Yeah, in hindsight, he should have. But, you know, Fabinho, I wouldn't say Fabinho's cheated. I'd say he bought the foul. It was one of them, you know, professional fouls where any kind of slight contact, he's going to try and make the most of it. Liverpool struggling at that time, especially with Salah just going off as well. It's 2-2. They're going for the title. Nothing's really happening. Players are going to try different things. They're going to try different tactics, trying to gain any advantage they can. And, you know, Richie got close to Fabinho. Fabinho thought, you know what? If I go down, if I get a free kick, I'm in a good position. We can score. And that's what happened. And like Rod said, you've got to defend the cross better as well. It's poor defending. But, again, Liverpool, you know, got that luck that you can probably say they deserve. But, so, you know, they're going for the title. They're going to try whatever they can. And, you know, I suppose you can't blame them for that.
Yeah, but, and the defending was shocking from Newcastle for all three goals. I mean, they gave Van Dijk basically the whole of Newcastle to head the ball in.
Yeah.
Salah's goal should have been prevented. And obviously the winner was shocking defending. But, you know, I've got to give credit to Benitez because his team didn't roll over like we thought they would.
I didn't think they'll roll over. I mean, Newcastle and Liverpool have had history before, you know, a couple of 4-3s in the past where Liverpool...
You do know who the Newcastle manager is, right?
Yeah, I do know. And Brendan Rodgers tonight as well. So all the omens were one of them, hopefully, to do well. Benitez did. Liverpool tried to find Adam to win, and Brendan were trying to, you know, stop City winning the league to help Liverpool, which that didn't happen, but... I don't think we go on that these days. You know, Benitez managed Liverpool a long time ago. He wants to do the best for Newcastle. And, you know, Liverpool at the end of the day are a better team than Newcastle. So, you know, you'd expect Liverpool to go up there and win, regardless of the situation. You know, Benitez got his tactics wrong. But again, you know, you could say quality prevailed in the end and Liverpool won the game.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, just one more question before we move on. Is there another twist in the tail? Are City going to drop points at Brighton? Rancy, what do you reckon?
Nope. I think Company's goal is all but sealed it. I can't see them going to Brighton and not getting 3 points. I think they'll get the job done early there. I don't think it'll be as nervy as it was tonight against Leicester. I do expect Liverpool as well to win against Wolves. I know Wolves are one of the bogey teams for the top six, but Liverpool know that they need to win it if they're going to stand any chance of winning the title. But I don't think it will be enough, because I think City will get the job done at Brighton, and I think it will be a comfortable win for them.
Okay. Dan, do you have any hope that City will slip up? Because I know Wolves are going to be a difficult game, aren't they?
This is the thing. I don't even know, with the injuries at the moment and the fact that the nerves as well, because I know I've been at Anfield when they're nervous, and it's all great when we get an early goal when they're screaming and that, but if Liverpool don't get an early goal, they are going to be so quiet and it's going to make the players nervous. So even if City were to drop points against Brighton, I don't even know if we're going to beat Wolves with the likes of VR and Jimenez now, given the circumstances. But yeah, I think it's finished now. I had my hope there. I was hoping that the form that Tielemans and Vardy were in at Leicester were going to do something, but that I've just seen the Iheanacho miss again and I want to cry. He shot the ball close. I didn't realize how close to the goal he was. He was closer to the corner flag than scoring a goal. It's like, and people are hitting me up that hate Liverpool and they're saying, oh, I reckon he did that on purpose because he used to play for Man City. And I don't know if you can stretch it that far, but I'm just looking, I'm thinking that, like, he's normally got composure in front of goal, but I agree with Randy, man. I think it's done. I think it's done now. It's just amazing how many points we're going to amass. Could end up only losing one game and not win the league. So, yeah, as I said before we started, when we were having a quick discussion, you have to look at the United game, the goalless draw there. We drew at home with Leicester, we drew with West Ham. So it's crazy that a team has only drawn 7 games this season. You're going to look at it and say it was the draws, but unfortunately when you're going against City, this is what happens. Why we'll add just quickly as well before the others come in and we go to our next matches, that I do feel with a few of the decisions that have gone in Liverpool's favour this season has been highlighted by the fact we're in this social media era, and a lot of people obviously do not want Liverpool to win the league, because I've watched City almost every game this season. Not too long ago they played Watford. There was a blatant offside, Sterling scored, no one's talking about it anymore. And I've seen numerous other things no one's talking about, but every little thing that has gone Liverpool's favour this season has been continually, even as I said earlier, Company could have been sent off for that challenge on Salah. And no one's highlighted these things now, but every little thing now, because a lot of people not want Liverpool to win the league, has been highlighted. If we come up short, there's nothing for anyone to complain about anymore, is there? But yeah, now to go to the original point still, and the guys, I think it's done now, unfortunately.
Well, Kojo, it's interesting. Dee mentioned the company challenge on Salah, because that was the game where City beat Liverpool. Was that the turning point in the season?
Yep. Yes, it was. I think. Once they got the winner, I think they believe that they can take Liverpool as far as they can and then go and win this league. And I think because Liverpool had a gap over them, I think, just before that game as well. So, you know, it's one of those things in title races. When you're competing against a team next to you and you beat them, it gives you all the momentum, because it puts the doubt into the other team's head. You know, there's hardly teams in Premier League history that have lost to their title rivals and then just bounced back out of nowhere and just gone ahead and won the league quite comfortably. So, you know, that was a big, big one for them. And yeah, after today's result as well, it just puts the icing on the cake for City. It's game over.
Mm. Rod, Jan, you guys agree with that? Is it done and dusted?
Yeah, I think so. I think Liverpool probably got a harder game than Man City at last game of the season. I don't think it will be a straightforward for Liverpool to go and beat Wolves. Wolves are one of them teams that, you know, they set the score up really well. They've got good players on the counter-attack. Defensively, they're not that bad. And they can get at Liverpool. Brighton, I don't think Brighton will have enough to offer Man City. And if City score early, I see City winning comfortably.
Mm. And Rod, Wolves have got Dr. Nuno now because he got an award for some kind of achievement that he's got Wolves in the Premier League and whatnot. But that's by the by. Do you think Wolves can stun Liverpool?
Yeah, I agree with Jan. Liverpool arguably got the harder game. And if they don't score in the first 15-20 minutes, it'd be difficult for Liverpool. But if they do score in the first 15 minutes, it'll be an easy afternoon for them. But I still think City will win, even though it'd be difficult. You know, Brighton now safe, and they're not going to go defensively on the home patch. So they're going to have to come out and play, and then that's going to leave up spaces. And I think City, needing to win that game to win the league. Yeah, I think they'll do it, yeah.
Mm, there you go. Right, moving on. And Man United's quest for top four came to an abrupt end at an already relegated Huddersfield. But Arsenal's chances have gone from slim to none after a draw against Lifeboat Brighton. That's what I like to call them, Lifeboat Brighton, because they've survived the drop. Rod, Ole said United don't deserve top four. I don't think they deserve top 10, to be honest. But just like last week, we were winning comfortably and the moment of stupidity cost us points. Can you perhaps explain why Luke Shaw did what he did, or what he was thinking, or what trying to do in the build-up to Huddersfield equaliser?
No, I don't. It's, it's, where do I start? How long have you got? Oh my god!
Rod, you're starting to sound like me, mate.
Why? No, but you look at it now. No. That performance there. Let's be truthful now. Huddersfield are shite.
That's putting it nicely.
they're relegated. They haven't won a game for I don't know how long. And we just go there and we just that second half. It just proves what kind of mentality the players are. They've come in and something's happened within that dressing room for some of them players to just switch off like that or turn off. So obviously something's going to happen, and obviously it'd be better for the club because some of them are just not good enough. And the mentality of them, obviously they're good enough to win 13 games, so there is players in there, but the mentality of to be a Manchester United player, some of them just don't have it. So, Ollie's got a big, big job. So, and I'm sure, people are questioning, should we have took him? We should have took him. He's done a fantastic job, but he can see it. Like we talked about last week, he's a Manchester United lad. He'll know what Manchester United need, what players we need to bring in, what players we need to get out, because it's embedded now with a few bad eggs, and you need to get a few bad eggs out there. And there's not a lot of world class players there, not a lot at all. We're looking at probably two. Possibly free with Martial because he's still young, and if you look at his stats, he's got a lot of goals for a lad his age and the games he's played. If you put him up against the stats of the young United greats of the past who've gone and played for Manchester United, so I'd stick with him. But yeah, he's a big, big overall. But when you're giving new contracts to Smalling and Jones, oh my God, Phil Jones, big issues with that, because Smalling's done okay this season. I probably could bear that, but Phil Jones, he is not a Manchester United player. He's not a Sunderland player. He should be playing for Wickham or something like that. It's shocking.
So. The thing is, Rod, to be honest, I see a few parallels with when Fergie took over, because with Ollie, the same sort of thing where he's got kind of like inherited this culture at the club. Fergie had players that were, drinking, gambling, all that kind of stuff. And he kind of cut the weeds from day dot. And then he kind of built players, built a squad with the players that he brought in, with your Bruces, with your Phelans and all this kind of stuff. And Ollie's got a similar situation in the sense that he's got players that have a completely different mentality to what he expects or what you expect from a United player. So the difference is, Ferguson had Martin Edwards there, whereas Ollie has got Woodward, who cares more about players that have got big social media following, and United having 20 million odd followers on Twitter, wherever it is. So it's a different kind of dynamic, isn't it?
Well, it is, because when you've got players who that grew up in the club, who know the history of the club, have been around the club when it was great. I am talking about Jesse Lingard, and on the day of a big, massive game, or the week of a big, massive game, he's opening a clothing range on the week of the Liverpool game, and just stuff like that. It just wouldn't happen in his day. I'm sure he'll educate the players there who do stay. But this social media is a secondary to Manchester United, because ultimately this is your job and this comes first, and if it doesn't, then you're down the road.
That's right. And Kojo, Rod in the past has actually spoken about the lack of leaders on the pitch for United, and Lindelof was seen geeing up the players after Huddersfield's equaliser while Ashley Young was kind of just standing there, hands on hips. It was embarrassing, to say the least, wasn't it?
Yeah, still, if I sit here and talk about Ashley Young, I'll be in bed to sleep tonight.
you might sound racist though if you do that,
innit? Oh, stop it!
I might just do so, but
Kojo's gonna have an aneurysm. Leave him alone.
honestly, when you asked him about Luke Shaw's defending for the goal, I was kind of relieved because I thought, yeah, but I'm hoping that question's gonna come to me. But then you mentioned Ashley Young, and honestly. Where do I even begin?
Well, that header says it all, doesn't it? You remember the header?
Which one?
The one near the halfway line where he's headed it, where he's tried to head it forward and it's gone backwards. It's almost as if someone with a triangular head couldn't have done that.
Yeah, you know what? I've cursed him out so much already that I can't run out of words for him now, man. He just needs to go, I don't know where he can... go and find Leon Ridgewell and play poker with him. I don't know, just go, because honestly, that video of Lindelof, I don't usually jump on videos like that and say, okay, he's just talking him up. Lindelof talking doesn't make him a much bigger leader and stuff, but you're just standing there and he looks lost. He looks genuinely lost, like he doesn't know what the hell he's doing or where he is. And that is the epitome of his defending as well and his overall play. And he is, without a doubt, the most trash right back we've seen this season and probably in Premier League history. I want to be so, so blunt right now. He is...
Trippier.
No, Trippier's better. Simple as that. Trippier has been utterly dog shit.
I'm not having that.
No, bro. Yeah, because you're not having that because he's your boy. He's your Tottenham boy. And he's stressed you out. If you go and put Ashley Young right back here, I don't think you'll be watching Tottenham again. You need to understand, this guy is a failed winger. His speciality is crossing. He can't cross. So if you can't do what you're supposed to be good at, what the hell are you on the pitch for? You see, Ranty, Estelle, go somewhere, please.
This is the most depressing shoot to defence in the history of this podcast, bruv. Off the course, I'm flipping suicidal.
Oh, it's not
going to... Me and the United lads flipping out.
It's not going to get any better, D. Don't worry about it. I'll tell you what, Jan, listen, I'm actually... not sure what I can ask that I haven't already done in the last 3 years. I mean, this is the worst United team in living memory. We've done that. I mean, it's the most disinterested United team in living memory. We've done that. I guess the only positives we can take are Chong and McTominay, who had good games, and there's only one game left.
Yeah, they were the only positives. If there were any positives, I mean... I think I saw a bunch of United players who know that they're not going to play at United next season. I think Ollie's probably already told them. If he's had the permission from upstairs to ship all these players out, I think Ollie would have told them and said, listen, enjoy your last two games in a United shirt because you won't be there next season. I think it's time for... Listen, United can't get any worse than what they are. So if you're going to play Gomez, Greenwood, Chong, all these players, McTominay, at least they're going to play with a little bit of passion. They're going to play for the shirt. All right, the quality might not be there now and they need to learn the game, of course, but I'd rather have them four than your Lukaku's, your Sanchez's, your Martial's, and the rest of them. So Cardiff is a good opportunity to put them in, see what they can do. I don't see... Everyone is expecting United to bring in all these hosts of players next season. It's not going to happen. I think they'll probably go youth with all these players because they're not going to attract the players that the club are going to want. Playing Europa League football is a downside. Nobody really wants to play in that anyway. So, like I said to you still last week, I'm not even exaggerating. I don't see a future for United at the moment. I really do. I just think everything's doom and gloom. You know, there's no structure there at the club. The club seems to be going backwards, you know, week in, week out. Yeah, it's good to say we need to ship out 10 players, but the wages that some of them are on, who's going to take him? Who's going to take Alexis Sanchez at £400,000 a week?
Yeah, but don't forget, Jan, what they could do, they could probably say to the player, we'll pay up the rest of your contract and just take a lower cut when you go elsewhere.
Yeah, I suppose so, but then they're still losing out on that. You know, players like Phil Jones on £120,000 a week. You know, we've just given this guy a new contract. How can the United fans not be happy when you're giving Phil Jones a new bloody contract? I mean, this is what I mean. Unless they get somebody there who's a director of football that's gonna help Ollie, United are in massive problems, mate. Massive.
Absolutely. And Ranty, if Watford beat Man City in the cup final, then United will start their Europa League campaign in July, which means the pre-season Champions Cup tour won't happen. And in turn will mean the commercial revenue from what happens goes up in flames. Now, I've been told Woodward will be gone by Christmas if things don't improve. Why wait till then?
Well, I mean, I'm a Spurs fan and I've got a few United fans that I know, and it's quite clear that Woodward's intent and his motivation comes from the commercial side of things, and he has absolutely no idea what he is doing on the pitch. I know a lot of people didn't like the fact that Jose Mourinho was at the club and his ethos wasn't being instilled at the club. It was reflective on the pitch as well. But mate, he was only just part of the problem, and I think we're seeing that now. I think it's a decision that the guys at the top have to make, whether or not they want Manchester United to be the club that they once were, or they just want to continue making revenue upon revenue upon revenue. Right now, you're in a poor state. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer being appointed was a mistake. I think it was a knee-jerk reaction. I don't know if the Man United fans agree with me, but I just can't see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer lasting his contract. So I don't know where you guys go from there. There's clearly going to have to be an overhaul. Who you guys bring in remains to be seen. But I think you guys have got a lot of catching up to do, because the rival teams around you are going to only strengthen. That's not just City, it's not just Liverpool. I expect Chelsea, well, actually, they got the transfer ban, but they, at some point, they will strengthen as well. Tottenham can't be any worse than they are now. And Arsenal as well are going to look to improve. So, as it stands, United are in big, big trouble, and I don't know whether Woodward can weather the storm or whether he will be public enemy number one.
Well, yeah, but according to his bosses, he's doing the job, isn't he? He's bringing money to the club. That's what the club wants.
I mean, from a commercial side of things, he's bringing money into the club, but it's like, in terms of what's happening on the pitch, can you really say he's bringing the results? And I would suggest no. And I think the Manchester United fans would agree with me on that as well. No, but if the club are at a standstill now, it just goes to show where the mentality of the club is at the moment. It's not the United way. That's why a lot of these old school Manchester United players, these ex-players are coming out and they're so frustrated. They're so frustrated and they're taking it out on the players. They're taking it out on the team. They want to see their club back, and it's just not happening. And it's unfortunate because you can't just, you know, we're not at a stage now where Manchester United can just, you know, pump 200 million into the kitty and say, all right, yeah, we're going to buy this player, we're going to buy this player, we're going to buy this player, and things change. Because you guys spent 50 million on Fred. Do you know what I'm saying? You guys spent 50 million on Fred. What has he brought to the table? You know what I'm saying? Like, there was a, Martial's bonus if he got the Ballon d'Or in 2019. So there was all these contract clauses with these players who are just not fulfilling their potential, and it's costing you. You know, it's costing you, giving long term contracts to Smalling and Jones. It's not setting the right precedent in my eyes, and I think there's a lot of. Rethinking that needs to be done at the club in order for them to get back to where they once were.
Well, see, this is it. Apparently, Jurgen Klopp was in line to get the United job, and Woodward actually spoke to him, and he sold United as an adult Disney World, which kind of made Jurgen laugh, and I don't blame him. But see, this is the thing. This is the best analogy I can give of United at the moment. Old Trafford is a brothel, right? And the players are the prostitutes, because they're using their social media and all this other stuff to put themselves in the window. But in actual fact, they're getting fucked every week. That's effectively it. They get fucked every week and they get paid to get fucked every week. And nothing's really going to change until the hierarchy fuck off. But that's another story for another time and another podcast, because we've been going on about United for a while. So let's talk about another club that's in disarray, Arsenal. And Rod, they kind of blew their chance for a top four finish. I mean, to make matters worse for Emery, many fans walked out before the end of season lap of honour. And Arsenal Fan TV obviously got some fantastic viewing numbers as a result of it. Yesterday's game pretty much summed up their season, really. All huff and puff, but little to show for it because of comical defending, no?
Yeah, I agree, but they're still in a chance to qualify for the Champions League and win a trophy, so I think they're in a little bit better position than us, only slightly, but they're in the same position. That, you know, defensively, they're all over the place, and, you know, they've got players there that have got contracts that shouldn't really be there, because, you know, we talk about Manchester United, it is the club it is, and it's a fantastic club, but, you know, Arsenal's got great tradition as well, and a great club. You know, the fans of late, you know, can whine and moan and do your frigging head in, but, you know, that's what they've created, and that's what they're about. But yeah, they're in just exactly the same position as us, but, you know, I still think that their manager, they still got to give him time, because he did start doing well with them, but, you know, obviously, you know, you can only do as good as with what you've got, and what he's got is not good enough at the minute. It's the same deal with Manchester United, but not as bad, I don't think, because, you know, we need an overhaul, but where Arsenal need an overhaul, but not as big.
Has Unai Emery moved them forward then, at least, do you think?
Yeah, well, yeah, because I don't think they're that soft touch that they were under Arsene Wenger. You know, with Arsene Wenger, I think they would have possibly finished lower. But, you know, he started very well. But, yeah, I think they've still got that. They've got a bit more steely about him. But, like I say, you've got to give him time. It's a big club, Arsenal. You've got to give him at least four or five transfer windows to mould his own team. Because he's still got a lot of Arsenal Wenger players there. And it's just the same deal at Manchester United, like I say. But it's still a big job, though.
Yeah, you're right. And I know you've got one of these what are they called, fan club memberships for Aubameyang. He missed a great chance to win the game for Arsenal and grab his 20th league goal of the season. His goals to games ratio is impressive, but is this statistic misleading?
We were having a talk about this on social media between obviously us guys, but on the show it was actually D-Man that tweeted it and not myself. Arsenal fans were going all over social media and talking about this stat that Aubameyang had scored consecutively from his shots on target. Like, I think it was like 11 or 12 in a row or something stupid like that. But I did point out that that's only because when he misses really badly. And yesterday, it would have been audacious the way he did that scissor kick or whatever you want to call it. But you can't be missing from that close, a 50 million plus striker, you can't be missing for there. If he scores that, Arsenal's hopes of coming in the top four are still alive. But him and Lacazette have been guilty of some really bad misses this season. But the difference is, Lacazette's always trying. He never goes into hiding. Whereas Aubameyang, certain times, you don't even realise he's on the pitch if he's not putting the ball in the goal. He's missed that penalty against Tottenham that is proven to be 10 times more costly than it seemed at the time. And, it's when he was in Germany with Dortmund, he missed a few chances, but he was so fast and the game started so over there, he got through and he scored a stupid amount of goals. He was getting like 38, 40 a season there. But because Arsenal, when Ozil doesn't play especially, are devoid of ideas, he's not getting as many chances. So you've got to put the ball in, man. When you cost that much money and have that much quality there, you've got to be scoring. So yeah, he's covered it up. But it all comes to the fall now, because the fall season started. I thought he was going to finish as top scorer. So the fact that I've stated Mo Salah being a Liverpool fan for most of the season, and he might end up getting it. It goes to speak volume of the amount of chances that others have missed.
Fair enough. And Jan, Arsenal are two Europa League games away from sneaking into the Champions League through the back door. I said they'd win it at the beginning of the season. Do you think they'll do it?
I think Chelsea will win it.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to fancy Sarri to break his European... Well, he's not even his European, just his duck of winning trophies. I fancy Chelsea to win it at the start of it. And I'm still going to go for Chelsea. I think it'll be a Chelsea-Arsenal final, and Hazard will turn up in the final and win it for them.
Oh, wow, okay. Well, he shook his head when some Chelsea fans asked him if he was going to stay, so perhaps that could be as a parting gift, but you never know.
It'll be his last game in a Chelsea shirt.
There you go. Right, top four is pretty much wrapped up now. Chelsea pumped Watford 3-0, while nine-man Tottenham's 1-0 loss at Bournemouth didn't affect their position. Coach, after Chelsea's drubbing at Bournemouth, we, that being Jan and I, believe it was curtains for Sarri, but the Italian has somehow guided Chelsea back into the Champions League and could have a Europa League triumph under his belt, according to Jan. It's been a successful season for Sarri, given the circumstances, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's turned out great for him, but again, it's because teams are... The whole race for the top four has been an utter travesty. So it was going to be either one of United, Arsenal and Chelsea being rubbish, but it being able to make it. And Chelsea managed to pick up points at the right time. But all in all, it's not been a bad season. I mean, in terms of first season, in terms of how far behind they were in getting to the top four last season and everything coming full circle, it seems as if it's become a good season. I think Chelsea fans will call it a good season if they grab the Europa League. It will be a decent season for them if they don't win the Europa League, but obviously they've got top four. I think that's where the changes happen, because if they win something, suddenly everything changes. He's become successful in his first season, all of that, and we might hear them shouting Sarri ball again like they did in August. They didn't really know where it was. Because no one knows where it is. It's a myth. So, it's... Trophies change everything. That's just the way it is. And now they're in the semi-finals. They got their way, got at Frankfurt. Frankfurt losing 6-1 on the weekend will probably give them a bit of confidence going into the second leg. And that's top four secured. Maybe he says, I'll play Hazard in this game and then rest him in the league, because we don't need to really play him anymore. And then hopefully get over the line and go and win. I think if they get to the final, I think they will win it. I still don't think Arsenal going through, personally.
Stel, can I add something on Sarri, please, if I may?
Well, you bite it in, so you might as well.
Yeah, I will.
It's like walking in on someone having a wank, you know?
No, I'd walk back out on that one, but...
No, you wouldn't.
For me, the turning point of Sarri was Kepa in the cup final. I think before that, he was under massive pressure. He was going to lose his job. I think that incident with what happened and him dropping him for the next game actually got the players back on side. And ever since the League Cup final, which arguably you could say they could have beaten Man City on that day, he's turned his fortunes around after that incident. So he's gone on a decent run after that incident happened. So it seems like the players started thinking, well, you know what? We might as well play for him now, because we know what the Chelsea players are like over the last few years. So for me, that incident was the turning point for Sarri this season.
Fair enough. Ranty, your boy Spurs, you've lost 13 games this season. By any other campaign, you'd sit 5th or 6th. Granted, United and Arsenal have been absolutely dog shit, but 23 wins from 37 games is quite impressive, man.
Let me tell you something about Spurs this season, yeah.
Tell me.
And Kojo will let you know, I have not been impressed with my team whatsoever.
Wow, okay.
He's fuming.
Wow, this...
I've not been, I know a lot of people have lauded Pochettino for the job that he's done. And granted, yes, it's given the circumstances, not buying anyone in the summer, having another opportunity to buy in January, not buying, you know, losing Dembele, we can go on, World Cup, injuries, etc., etc. Yes, he's done a good job in that respect. However, I don't care what anybody says. 13 losses in one season and you're in the top four is unacceptable. It is unacceptable. That is a combined that we basically totaled our 2016-17 2017-18 losses this season, in just one season. So for me, it's completely unacceptable. We've missed Winks. Winks has been a huge loss, and I never thought I would say that. Obviously, Dembele was key to our midfield, and we sold him for peanuts because we didn't want him to go on a free. That's Daniel Levy for you. But yeah, we've just been horrendous. Like, I've had no faith going into the last few games. I said it prior to the loss against Bournemouth that we may not win. I was scared of Fraser. I was scared of Callum Wilson. I was scared of King. Last season, this wouldn't have been the case. The season before probably wouldn't have been the case either. But this is the position that we find ourselves in. But thankfully, as you guys have pointed out, the teams below us have been equally as bad. So that's worked out in our favour. So we're stumbling across the top four finish line. And I'm glad we are because... obviously, we've got the new stadium, and it would have been a travesty if we had to play, I don't know, an FC Krasnokov, you know, in Kazakhstan, with only like a capacity of 15,000 in a 60,000 seat stadium. So that would have been very, very embarrassing on our part. But yeah, we've somehow managed to paper over the cracks being in the Champions League semi-finals. But I haven't been impressed with my side. Pochettino as well, he's in a few games he's been tactically inept. He's cost us in a few games. But yeah, thankfully it hasn't cost us ultimately. So I'm relieved in that respect. But overall, I haven't been impressed with my team whatsoever. I'm expecting an overhaul in the summer. There's a lot of deadwood in that team right now that need to leave. There's a lot of players who have just been strolling season in, season out, and thinking that, you know, they have no competition, so they can just play how they want to. And that's catching up with them. The quality is clearly not there if you compare us to the teams in the top four, man to man, in the top six rather, man to man. And I just really, really hope this time around that Levy just says, you know what, I trust you to give you a kitty to spend on what you want, go and compete. Go and challenge the likes of Manchester City. Go and challenge the likes of Liverpool and show me what you're made of. Because the position that he's left Poch in this season is unacceptable. And I don't know how we've managed to you know, barring an 8-goal swing on the last day of the season, I don't know how we've managed to make the top four.
It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, third place in the league, Champions League semi-finalists. I mean, it's a far...
I think we dropped to fourth.
Well, fourth. Okay, sorry, fourth. But it's a far cry from having a manager waving his travel card in the press conference, isn't it?
Mr. Gross, yeah.
There you go. Right, just one more question for everyone, because I want to address this Eddie Howe or Eddie Hype nonsense. I mean, a few people on Twitter reckon Howe should be the man to replace Pochettino when he eventually leaves Spurs. Now, I know Bournemouth's form has been dreadful as of late, but they didn't go out to beat, or should I say, they didn't go all out to beat Spurs despite their numerical advantage. Can someone please tell me about this whole Eddie Hype thing and what makes him so special? Because I'm sitting here just scratching my balls about it. I don't understand. Anyone?
He sucks.
Okay, so there's one person on my team at least.
I don't think he sucks, but he is. I'm a fan, but in terms of the job that Poch has done, Eddie Howe is too tactically naive to be taking that Tottenham job. Because look, going forward, they're a joy to watch on the counter attack, but considering like their midfield wasn't that bad, I thought Sermon, for instance, was doing a decent job for them. Obviously, Gosden has been off, but you spent 23 odd million on Jefferson Lerma. You brought Ake in. Ake is your best defender. Go and buy another defender. Because I'm telling you, man, these Francises and Cooks and Smiths, and these men are not good. Me and Kojo could take up a whole podcast for our interactions about some of Bournemouth's defending in the last two seasons from discussions on Twitter, mate. So until he improves with the defensive side of the game, he's just going to be stuck at Bournemouth. I can't, like, though I'm a fan, I can't vouch for him anymore, because some of the defensive displays I've seen them turning out, it's just poor. Man. He's just poor. But yeah, so that's just going to be his job for now, unless he changes his ways. Look at Marco Silva, for instance. He is an attacking coach, but he's realised, because Everton sucked, he's playing Schneiderlin now with Gaye, who are two of the best in terms of tackling and intercepting in the Premier League. And now Everton are keeping clean sheets and a beaten team. So until Eddie Howe has an epiphany like that, changes his ways, that bigger job's not going to come for him, man.
Mm. Jan, I know you're on the edge of your seat ready to say, look at the resources he's got at his disposal, because his most expensive player was Jefferson Lerma, but they spent £80 million this season, which is a lot more than most Premier League teams. So can we just dispel that myth straight away?
No, I think you're being a bit harsh.
Oh.
I do. What is the expectancy at Bournemouth?
I don't fucking know.
Exactly, there you go. So,
well, what you tell me what it is then? What, to stay in the Premier League, which is the aim of, like...
Yeah,
what?
But you do that with managers like, you know, like Sean Dyche and this and that. All right, Bournemouth don't play attractive football, granted. But...
Oh, but we're led to believe that they do.
Sorry?
We're led to believe that they do.
No, they don't. Burnley don't play good football. Burnley play to their strengths. They play to the channels, they play to the two boys up front. Hopefully they get a set piece, win the game. That's what they do. I just don't understand when... You know, everyone's got their opinions, but how can you be very critical of a manager like Eddie Howe, who's brought Bournemouth out of the First Division, into the Championship, into the Premier League, kept them in the Premier League comfortable, they've never fought for relegation. What else is he supposed to do?
Oh, so that immediately makes him the heir to the Tottenham throne, does it?
No, I never said that. But then again, if he doesn't get a bigger club, how would you know if he's good enough for that job?
He was at Burnley for a cup of coffee, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, it didn't work out, you know.
Ah.
You know, manager's hard on 1 minute. Nuno Espirito, right? He's at Wolves.
Yeah.
Does everyone think he's a good manager?
Well, he's proven he's a good manager.
Why is he proven? Because he's taken Wolves into 7th or 8th. He got sacked at Valencia for doing nothing. He got sacked at Porto for doing nothing. So what, because he's finished 7th with Wolves or pumped money into the club from the Championship, that makes him an automatic good manager, does it?
Well, Valencia were in a bit of a mess when he took over, weren't they?
Yeah, but Gary Neville was there. Gary Neville's already had 6 months. He was terrible. That, you know, you could judge him on the time he was there. What I'm saying is, with Nuno, the two previous jobs before he got the Wolves job, he got sacked. He did absolutely nothing. Porto should win the league every year, and Benfica won it. He went to Valencia. He was poor. So he went to Wolves. Wolves have got money. All right, his signings have been good. But then again, like I said, he's got the money to bring in the players to make that side. So you can only judge a manager, for me, on the resources that he's got. Like we've run what he says about Pochettino. Pochettino's done a fantastic job at Tottenham, in my opinion, for a club that have not bought anybody in. Nobody. All their players mostly were in the World Cup. Everybody has strengthened. Look at the signings City and Liverpool have made, even United. You know, for him to be in a semi-final of a Champions League, to be, well, until yesterday, were third in the league, you know, all right, you can say, oh, what's he won in his career? But you can always not judge a manager from what he's won. For me, the job that he's doing is phenomenal. That's my opinion anyway. So, you know, I think Eddie Howe, if he deserves a job, you can, you can only judge Eddie Howe if he takes a bigger club and then he fails. Then you can say, you know what, the hype's not there. But to judge him on Bournemouth, who keeps them up, you know, the 2-3 years they've been in the Premiership quite comfortably, then...
Look how bad the three teams I've gone down have been. Fulham have spent over £100 million and they couldn't stay up.
Exactly.
But so they, because they've been awful.
Yeah, but if Eddie Howe had the Fulham job with more money to spend, he might bring better players and he might be a better manager at Fulham.
Right.
Maybe the level that...
Because players are really queuing up to play for Eddie Howe.
But you don't know
it's that. Like an A&E room, isn't it?
Yeah, but money talks, doesn't it, still?
I agree with a lot of what Jan's saying, which is why I'm saying Howe is a fan. And I think what Jan would probably go to say as well is that a lot of it, in terms of the one, which is why I mentioned Marco Silva earlier as well, is because of the brand of football that he plays as well. Though he is naive defensively, they play wicked counter-attacking football and they're exciting because other managers could maybe have kept them up, but not in the style necessarily that he's done. And a lot of the reason why I've backed him is because in the first season they came to the Premier League, half of their squad was injured. And he kept them up with ease to a point where he could come through and play like lesser teams to complete the season. And that's why I'm a fan. I actually wrote an article on that. That's why I was a fan. But he will, as Jan said, we won't know whether he can do better at a higher level unless he's actually given a job there. So we'll see.
Fair enough. Rod, would you have Eddie Howe at Spurs?
You know what, after this, I'm going to go and play on the motorway because I absolutely totally agree with what Jan just said.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
I disagree with Burnley because, you know, the great Eddie Howe couldn't do what Sean Dyche has done at Burnley. So, you know, but since Sean Dyche has been at Burnley, he's totally changed the ethos of the club. The training ground is now a Premier League training ground. You know, they built the infrastructure and they're now a permanent Premier League fixture. So, you know, he's done a fantastic job there as well.
And who's their record signing again?
Jan said. Tottenham job, you know, it becomes more difficult then because you're fighting at different levels. So, you know, it's very, very, very difficult to say whether he'd be a success or not. But, you know, he's been a success so far. So, given the right time and the right funds, I'm sure he would be, but would he do a better job than Pochettino's doing at the minute? No.
Well, there you go. It's taken 3 years, but Rod finally agrees with something Jan has said. I might as well work for the UN. I can sort everything out now.
I always get a free deal.
Turn a beef talk into a peace talk, you know? Excellent. Well, let's just wrap this one up because I haven't done a Euro trash this week because nothing really much has happened apart from Norwich's bus breaking down and the players having to push it. But let's talk about Frank Ribery because he's announced he's leaving Bayern Munich at the end of the season when his contract expires. Kojo, Ribery said he doesn't have any concrete plans for the future, but where do you think he's off to? Because a lot of people are saying MLS is the next place.
Kojo has aborted, I believe.
I think he's gone to MLS, hasn't he? Dan, what do you reckon? Where's Ribery going?
He's gone to LA Galaxy. Ribery. It's an intro. Maybe China? Yeah, China or MLS.
Okay.
He'll probably end up going. But though I do still think, though, obviously he's not as fast as he was, but I do still think the way that he plays, he could still do a year at I think someone promoted maybe should have a pop.
Oh, wow. What do you mean?
Just for a year. Like maybe the way that Norwich attack or something like that. Like, just get him in there and see what he can do. Depending if he doesn't want to, unless he wants money, then yeah, it will be MLS or whatnot. But I still think, like, a promoted Premier League team should have a pop. But yeah, he'll probably end up in, like, Qatar or China or something like that.
Well, never trust an over 30 that shaves things in their hair. That's all I have to say. Anyway, incidentally, Ribery got on the score sheet for Bayern at the weekend in their 3-1 win over Hannover. The Bavarians moved one step closer to winning the Bundesliga after Dortmund blew a 2-0 lead against Werder Bremen and drew 2-2. Jan, the Borussia bottle job continues and I absolutely love it. Why do you think they keep crumbling?
maybe they're kind of under the pressure. Maybe psychologically, mentally, they're not strong enough. Again, you know, Dortmund are a big club in Germany, and they keep failing. They're a bit like United. I think they don't have the players with the mental capacity to compete at that level. You know, they were ahead at one stage about, I don't know, I think it was 8 or 9 points, and slowly Bayern have clawed it all back, and Dortmund have done what Dortmund have been doing for the last few years, seem to bottle it right at the end.
Or maybe we can give the job to Eddie Howe, he'll win the Bundesliga, won't he?
Still, that's your Euro trash right there. Still, giving up the lead against Bremen, because I've backed these guys till I'm blue in the face, and they've just let me down again. This Bayern team are not even that great. I've watched them numerous times this season, and they're going to lead the league. The worst thing for them, as you pointed out, they had a double figure lead. I think it was like 11 points engagement. The worst thing happened was before they played the first leg against Tottenham in the Champions League, Alcacer and Royce got injured, and then they're two top scorers. And then after that, it just went down. They lost to, they've lost the Nuremberg and Fortuna Dusseldorf. And both times that they lost to them, they were in the bottom three. Yeah. Like, what the hell, man? Oh, they've let me down again. I so wanted still to be wrong with the whole Fordman thing. And he's won again.
Superb. That's what I like to hear. Right, let's talk quickly about Serie A, because I don't know if you guys remember when Everton got in the Champions League. Well, Atalanta beat Lazio 3-1 at the weekend, and they're now fourth in the table. Jan Gasparino spent about £45 million of the club's money in the summer, and I don't know how many people tipped Atalanta to slip into the top four and reach the Coppa Italia final. It's been a great season for them, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's the example I was going about Eddie Howe. Gasparini's been sacked by how many clubs in the past? So he's gone to Atalanta, given him a bit of money, he's got them to a cup final and a Champions League spot. Sometimes, you know, certain managers, you know, suit certain clubs, you know. So, but yeah, going back to Atalanta, they've done a brilliant job. You know, Zapata scored a lot of goals. Gomez has been a revelation for Atalanta this season. Ilicic as well has been brilliant. Atalanta played some really good stuff. They play free-flowing football. The front three keep exchanging at the top of the field. Defensively, they've been sad this season as well. You know, considering that you always talk about the big clubs in Serie A, Atalanta to be there where, you know, and what they've done this season has been phenomenal.
Excellent. I'm glad that you mentioned Eddie Howe in that one as well. You know, yeah, I think we're getting Connor a Wilf Zaha blow up doll, so we'll get you an Eddie Howe one. What do you reckon?
Listen, I never said I rated Eddie Howe highly. I just, you know, you can't give him stick for what he's done. That's all I'm saying.
It's a love thing. I don't know. On a final note, gentlemen, Norwich and Sheffield United were promoted back into the Prem last week, but the Canaries sealed the Championship title at Villa this weekend. Which of the two do you think will stay up? I know it's a bit early to say, but which of the two do you think will remain in the Premier League next season? Rod, who do you think?
To be honest, I don't think either will. If I was going to say one, I'd say Norwich.
Daniel Fox done an absolutely fantastic job there. He's, you know, again, zero resources, and you know, he's used his scouts very well, and he's spent his money very well as well. Yeah, and what do you reckon?
Yeah, his recruitment's been top notch at Sheffield United. It's, you know, the players he's got, he's done a fantastic job there. But it'd be very, very difficult. Another Huddersfield job. We like the Huddersfield. They'd do well to stay up, and you know, it'd be very difficult. But yeah. It's a great job, though.
Mm. Yeah, and you're going to buy a Delia Smith cookbook?
I can't cook to save my life, mate.
Well, you can learn with a cookbook.
I'll get Eddie Howe to cook for me. I'll tell you what's going to be interesting, Star, the playoffs this season.
Uh-huh.
You know, Villa, Leeds, Derby, West Brom. That you know, that's going to be tasty. And I don't know what you lot think of it, but since the scandal with Bielsa and Leeds and the whole spine thing, Leeds have gone downhill since then.
I just think they're just burnt out, mate, and it happens with Bielsa, seems.
I think if you look historically with his teams, they seem to always dip at the end of the season because the amount of work rate they put in at the start.
Yeah, I know. And I think someone was talking to Bielsa about the whole Derby situation because they got him in the playoffs, haven't they? And they asked him about if he's going to spy, and he just said, "You're not funny." So he's a bit pissed off, but Rantley...
who do we fancy for the playoffs, then? Who's coming up out of the four clubs? Who do we fancy?
I want Leeds to... Sorry, go ahead, Rod.
So, well, you say by the way they're playing, you'd fancy Villa, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm going for.
Villa. I think his form goes out the window when it comes to these, and like Derby got a good win at the weekend. You know, I got a sneak.
It does still, but when you say that, when you've been on a 12 game or 13 games unbeaten, you know, it breeds confidence. You know, you'd rather go in that than being that, like, drawing or losing, and you'd rather go in with a confidence attitude and thinking you've won the last 12, 13 games. So it does, it can help, but like you say, it's the playoffs and it's just a one-off game. And if it can happen, they're all good teams. I watched Derby and West Brom on the weekend, and you know, Derby are a good team as well. They've got a lot of good players, a lot of Welsh players. So yeah, it'd be interesting anyway.
Well, all four teams in the playoffs have got new managers, haven't they?
Pardon?
All four teams in the playoffs have got new managers.
Yeah, well, definitely all West Brom don't. West Brom don't get, and it will get relegated next year.
Yeah, exactly. I could go with Rod. I don't want West. They sacked him because they feared that they were going to not be able to go up automatically, and they still come fourth anyway. So I don't see the point of what the sacking was. So I hope they don't. I don't mind any of the other three, but I agree with Rod. I want Leeds to come up, but I think Aston Villa, I just think the goals from Abraham, McGinn, etc., I just think they're going to have too many goals in them and win. Because, like, last season, Fulham went on a mad winning run to end the season, lost the last game to Birmingham to not go up automatically, then they won in the playoffs. And I think Villa won, was it 12 or 13 in a row? Then lost on the last day to Norwich. And I think that, but overall, the momentum, I think that they might be the team that get over the line.
Rantley, since Jack Wilshere has gone on the wane, we need the super Jack. Is Grealish going to do it?
I hope so. I'm a big fan of Grealish. I've seen him play live a few times, and I've been so impressed with the lad. He's such a talent. He's been linked with Spurs as well, obviously in the summers. So I think right now the momentum is with Villa. Whether or not they can pull it off in the playoffs remains to be seen. As it's been said already, it's just one of those one-off games, so anything can potentially happen. But I do think Villa will probably end up in the Premier League, but another part of me hopes that they don't, so we can nick Jack Grealish from them. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, watch this space, because I actually can't wait for these playoffs. I think the most highly anticipated ones. These teams have played in the Premier League before, and it'll be great to see one of them back, obviously without West Brom, because you guys don't want them. I don't want to argue with you guys. I'm outnumbered. Anyway, right, that's it, gents. We're done for tonight. Quick plugs of your shows, Twitter handles, all that kind of stuff. D?
Right, my handle is @DoubleD, that's DUBULDEE, and the show I am part of is the D&D Football Factory, and our @ is @DD40Factory_, and our show is every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. on Top FM 95.5 FM.
You know, you were so fluent doing that in the past, but tonight it's kind of broken you, and you've forgotten you were Twitter.
I'm still emotional from the game stuff. Hearing my voice.
Well, have a Horlicks and go to bed, mate. You'll be all right. Ranty.
Don't worry, Dan. You're in fine company.
Oh, come on. Disconnect. Delete.
Sorry, guys.
Randy.
Yeah, you can catch my team on Twitter. Footy_says. That's FOOTY_SAYS. We're also on Instagram, FS Uncut, Facebook, Footy Says, and you can find us on YouTube as well, Footy Says.
Yeah, and your tweets get more people wound up than Touchline Fracar, mate. Well done. I don't know how you do it, but it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It's a great show as well. Rod?
Cheers.
Right, is Rod still there? Is he gone?
Sorry, @ Rod James Vicks.
There you go. And I think in the summer we'll be @Bale @United. What do you reckon? Could happen. Probably will happen. Jan?
Yannick is Jay.
Superb. That's it. Brilliant. We've done it. We've actually done it. We've gone just over an hour and 15 minutes. So that's it for us this week. You can follow us on Twitter at Shoot Defence. We're not as good as Footy says, to be fair, when it comes to the tweeting. So you better follow them because they're better than us. Anyway, so until next time, guys, take care of each other. Please, just be nice.